for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hello and welcome to the 294th edition of the Legal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm the Professor Emeritus, Matt Perkins, joined, as always, by a man, a post-corner route across the Harpeth River from me here in the Music City. It's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
What is up, Matt?
How you doing, Coach?
I'm great, man. It's another exciting day. It's a great opportunity for us, and I'm so jazzed up to be here, man. It's a great week of college football, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, well, we can't get started without the third amigo in the second city, a man who got to learn the safety dance this weekend. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and Counting. Wake up! It's not Iowa's offense. It's Josh Cook.
I don't wake up till Iowa scores a touchdown.
Well,
you're going to be Rip Van Winkle, and all those Auburn people wouldn't know that because they burned down a library that one time and they had all them coloring books in there and they just wouldn't know who Rip Van Winkle was. That good, they're just going to run a few ball plays. I'm just an old ball coach, so don't listen to me. It's okay.
Well, the old ball coach in the building tonight as well. Maybe Lou Holtz will join us later, too. You never know what's going to happen on Illegal Motion. But we are, of course, presented by betonline.ag, and they are the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, golf, and most importantly, college football. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting to props, futures, and more. So head on over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Gentlemen, we start this evening, as we do every week in season, with some quick slants. Josh. I think it's gonna be about time for you to get us started here. So why don't you kick it off? Let's talk about some Hawkeyes.
All right. Well, it's a national joke. I'm sure all of our listeners know, but Iowa won a game 7-3 against the third ranked team in America. Of FCS, the Jackrabbits. they scored a field goal and two safeties. Let's start with the positives. The defense is as good as advertised, and special teams is incredible, especially Torrey Taylor, who's gonna win the Ray Guy this year. Let's start with the deficiency. We all knew it going into the season is the offense. So, I think Matt was fully expecting me to be doom and gloom and glass half empty and totally freaked out. And I'll get to that in a second. I want to be slightly optimistic just for a moment to be fair and balanced, right? I can't be fully a homer. But the biggest leap you'll see in a team is week one to their second week. So just getting back to game speed, hard to replicate stuff in practice. Iowa's offense was awful last year. They were never this bad. This was a career El Stinko for Spencer Petras. He, obviously has struggled at times throughout his career. These numbers are nowhere near what he was last year. So, there's improvement there. The other thing is a bunch of his important weapons were out. There were a few key receivers that got banged up right at the end of practice, right at the end of camp. So he was really playing with just one scholarship receiver in Arlen Bruce. And Arlen Bruce had a fine day, 5 receptions, 68 yards. The tight end, Sam Laporta, got involved. So, you know, there's room for improvement. The other thing is, this is not atypical for Iowa. They a year where they competed for the Big Ten. They started the season barely beating Northern Iowa, needing two blocked field goals, excuse me, to survive that game. With El Asico coming up against Iowa State, I'm sure they had a slightly limited playbook to not give some tape away. That is the glass half full. That's the optimist. The reality of it, though, is they had all offseason to figure stuff out. Brian Ferentz talked about how they were simplifying the playbook, they were streamlining things, that they were going to be incredible. The Ferentz press fanboys back in Iowa City were just going on and on and on about Petras and camp and how vastly improved he was and how he's basically a practice Heisman Award winner. He hasn't put it together in an actual game. He was a sub 60% completion guy last year by Modern Football standards. That's terrible. But this is a part of a bigger trend. Anyone care to guess the last time Iowa had a first team All Big Ten quarterback? It was during the Ferentz era. You don't have to go all the way back to
Brad Banks.
You guys kind of split the difference. Actually, it was Drew Tate in 04.
But my second guess was going to be Ricky Stanzi. So
pretty close. Yeah,
Stanzi the man. Drew Tate.
Okay.
Yeah, Drew Tate in 04.
He sent Saban off to the NFL.
He did. Yeah, we were co Big Ten champions in 04 also. Mm-hmm. Anyone care to guess the last quarterback to hit 60% of his passes for the Hawkeyes?
I'll go with Ricky Stanzi.
Nate Stanley. Nate Stanley.
You guys literally split the difference again. It was CJ Beathard back in 2017. So the trend is very clear. Yeah. So the trend is very clear that Iowa doesn't really have a coherent offense. That's consistently coherent. They'll have these random flashes like Ohio State a few years ago, and they'll have total stingers like what we saw on Saturday. But that's the problem. It's too up and down. And, you know, is it a Kirk Ferentz issue? Is it a Brian Ferentz issue? Is it a Spencer Petras issue? The O-line is very new this year. Is that an O-line issue? It's a mixture of all of them. But if I were to kind of assess the formula and what's going on. First of all, Kirk Ferentz gets to run the offense he wants. And so he's telling baby Brian what to run. And then from there, Spencer Petras, there were wide open people all day on Saturday. He could not hit the broadside of a barn. So I think it starts with Kirk. Spencer Petras just is not a Big Ten quarterback. It's very obvious. Brian's still confusing play calling with times. He doesn't have much of a rhythm. And offensive line issues, I mean, hell, if you have a coherent offensive coordinator, you just work around those. You scheme around that issue. So to me, that's the ranking. It's Ferentz, Kirk Ferentz, Petras, Brian Ferentz, O-line. Big game now against Iowa State. I don't know the last time this game has been this big for both teams, because Iowa State looked real good against their FCS opponent, breaking in a lot of new faces. We know their quarterback, Brock Purdy's gone, Breece Hall off to the NFL. So Iowa State's feeling really confident coming in that game, and Iowa fans are not so confident.
Well, we will talk about that later. Next, we're going to take that quick slant that turned into a broken play. We ran around on the back end. We turned into Russell Wilson back there, but it's okay.
Turned into Stetson Bennett back there.
You asked a very difficult question to diagnose Iowa's offense.
Well, what might be a little bit, well, I mean, the other question I'm going to ask, coach, offense, apparently Georgia now has the best offense in the SEC.
Yes, we do. And we finally I think Kirby finally turned the reins loose on Todd Monken and said, do what you do. And you have this veteran quarterback. You have all these pieces. Go do it. And he did. They went first seven drives, touchdowns, all touchdowns. They drove the ball with ease. They didn't meet a third down that they didn't convert with ease. They ran the ball, crammed it down Oregon's throat. I mean, it just seemed like they were hitting on all cylinders offensively. They could do no wrong. The play calling was amazing. The execution was amazing. Stetson looked completely under control and completely like he had complete command of that offense. And it was a thing of beauty. Defensively, Ben don't break at times. Chris Smith and Malachi Starks coming up with two huge interceptions to stop really any threat that Oregon possibly had that game.
Yeah, that's were stopped true on those two freshman series. Malachi Starks to you with a ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Ridiculously athletic play.
Probably one of the best picks I've ever laid my eyes on. It was, if you didn't see it, if you weren't watching that game, if you're an Arkansas fan or a Cincinnati fan or a Miami fan or whoever else was playing in that time slot, Malachi Starks did this. I mean, he leapt backwards, full extension. Almost completely fingertips, not quite, but almost completely fingertip. He was completely parallel to the ground and just snatched the ball out of the air. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. But, I mean, like you said, to answer your question, this offense, this is what it looks like when you let your offensive coordinator go. When you leave him alone and say, go, he goes. And he lets his veteran quarterback go. And they have weapons, including Big O, who looks like an NBA center. They're catching passes at tight end.
That's very true. Yeah, if Georgia's offense is this good, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say, man. Like, there's not much else that you could really want out of a team. That was probably as best
of a start as we could have hoped for.
And it was the quintessential Bo Nix game. He came out, looked good the first two drives, and then was terrible for the rest of the game.
Yeah, after they got off script, it was, yeah. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah, so
it was real bad.
Another team that had a real bad start to the season was Louisville. The Cardinals were, a team that Josh, you did not pick them very high. Josh, you picked them to finish sixth in the division, but Coach and I had them like third or fourth. But
I think I had Satterfield first fired.
Yes, but you still had them finishing above Syracuse.
I think we all had them finishing above Syracuse.
Above Syracuse in the pregame, in the preseason show. And I also, first of all, I have Florida State finishing dead last in that division. I think that's going to be wrong. But nonetheless,
it's the ACC, man. It's the ACC.
I spent a weird amount of time watching this game. Because, we've talked about I have an affinity towards Syracuse. But I was shocked at how awful the offensive game plan was for Louisville. Because they have Malik Cunningham has been an above average Power 5 starter. He's not great, but he's an above average starter, starting quarterback. He looks...
That's fair.
And they lost their best receiver.
I think the play calling was terrible in this.
But here's the thing: Syracuse has an excellent secondary. Syracuse has a decent defensive front. Syracuse is super weak at linebackers. Who is Louisville's best skilled player? It's Marshawn Ford, the tight end. He had three targets the whole game. I don't know what I mean. Yes, don't get me wrong. Like, their Central Arkansas transfer, Tyler Hudson, was awesome for them. He had 8 catches, 102 yards, but, it was, a lot of it was gimmicks. I am really curious to see sort of what happens here, because if they're going to bottom out, they have this incredible recruiting class coming in, right? Like, they currently have
committed. Now, with a coaching change, that won't last.
But here's the thing, is the administration going to fire him with this class coming in?
If it gets bad enough, yeah, absolutely, yeah, they will.
I mean, I think they would, too. I don't think he was a good hire to begin with. None of us liked him as a hire back when they hired him. What was that, 4 years ago? But
it's Todd Licklider. Todd Licklider.
Go on.
All right. Well, I know we're a college football
Benny
podcast.
Benny Lentlicker?
When Steve Alford was adiosed from Iowa basketball, they hired Todd Licklider from Butler, and everyone was super excited. They're like, oh, my God, Butler's phenomenal. Butler's phenomenal. Ohio State had recently hired Thad Matta. He was incredible. Butler's awesome. Butler's awesome. And little did Iowa know, there was a gentleman on the staff at Butler by the name of Brad Stevens. And he was the real brains behind the operation, not Todd Licklider. It's safe to say, based on the trajectory of App State without Scott Satterfield, that they were just fine.
I mean, I don't think Eli Drinkwitz was the brains behind that operation either.
That's true.
I think Missouri's finding that out. The current guy they got is pretty damn good. I'll talk about that later, but
we've gone so far off track already, so why not? Is Missouri the worst team in the SEC? Is Vanderbilt better than Missouri?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh.
I think so. Vanderbilt at least has an identity. They can run the ball. Yeah, Mike Wright is a special, special athlete.
Yeah.
I say yes. Vanderbilt's going to be a problem. I don't know that it's going to translate into a whole lot of wins.
Yeah,
it's not going to translate into a whole lot of wins because of who they're playing against, but it's going to be more competitive than Missouri. They're going to beat the hell out of Missouri.
I think
Missouri's worst in the league, worst in show. And Auburn's not far behind.
I'll say, you know, Missouri put up half a hundred against Louisiana Tech. They had some nice stretches. What I'm curious about. Hey, it's not an FCS team. It's not like they won 7-3 or an FCS team. I think
they're there, and they may as well be.
I think this time next week, if they get absolutely mollywopped up at Kansas State, we'll have our answer on Missouri. Yeah. That's a tough road game. That's a Big 12 team that we all loved.
Well,
if they hang around Kansas State,
mollywopped.
But I'm just saying, if they hang around or even pull off an upset, you know, I can see a scenario where Missouri could beat
What is
Auburn.
Missouri's state nickname?
The Show Me State.
The Show Me State, yeah. So show me.
Yeah.
Show me.
Well, here, I'm going to put a bow on my quick slant, because the guy who continues to show us every single week, Sean Tucker, 100 yards rushing, 84 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns. I mean, what else do you want out of the guy? He's freaking incredible. He's absolutely freaking incredible. Okay, let's get then into some of these bigger games. We're going to start, gents, with the Backyard Brawl Thursday night. That was a lot of fun on the back, you know, to have this rivalry back. It's been 11 years since the game was first played, or last played, I should say. Turning point in the game, though, to me,
it was a rough night for Pat McAfee last time it was played.
Turning point, though, for me, Coach, West Virginia had the ball at Pitt's 48-yard line, 4th-and-1, 6 minutes left. They are up 24-17, and they go on to they're up 31-24, and they go on and give up 14 straight points. How do you feel about that call as a coach? Because I think that's a tough call to make right there, to go for it or not.
Is, but in that scenario, your defense has been playing fairly well. You go for that. With 6 minutes left, you go for that because of the momentum. I think the reward outweighs the risk, and you go for it. If you don't get it, you're at midfield, your defense is playing okay. You probably didn't have much momentum to begin with. You're already losing. I mean, there's just, the upside is very, very good here. For me, I go for it. I think you get it. You nail it. I think you go down there and win. If they get it, they win. Because they're going to go score, and they're going to get all the momentum. I think we lost Matt. Did we lose Matt?
No, you didn't lose me. I was just expecting Josh to say
something. Oh. he just disappeared. I was muted, so I was like, oh, okay.
Well, now I got to read what you were texting me. Let's see. What did you text me?
I didn't text anyone anything.
So, I think you said you went off camera to text me.
No, I never said anything like that.
Thought you went off camera to make a burrito. What are you doing?
No, I went off camera because Coach was talking.
He went off camera to get another beer.
I did actually just finish one I'm drinking.
I must be having auditory hallucinations. I swear I heard you say I went off camera to text Josh.
I never said anything of the sort.
I went to a different tab, so I have no idea he dipped. Now, don't rewind. Leave that in there, man. Don't rewind that stuff.
You know what?
So
we're still talking Backyard Brawl. I mean, we're still talking Backyard Brawl, Josh. Like,
what do you guys say? I mean, did I say that so perfectly that it left you guys speechless? Yeah, I mean,
no. Go for it. Fourth and one. Go for it.
They're moving the ball. I will say, I was actually impressed at how well West Virginia's offensive line held up against Pitt's defensive front.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you go for it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, what were they averaging rushing yards in that game? I mean,
as a team, they averaged 5.6 yards per carry, and that includes five sacks for negative 23 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I was pretty sure it was over 5 yards a carry. I mean, you can't make 1 yard. Losing this game is, you know, it's your biggest rival. You haven't played it in a decade. Losing the game means you're going to be under 500 as a coach. I mean, Neil Brown, it's basically his career, and he's too scared to go for a 1 yard run. Go for it.
Yeah, you're already on the ropes, man. I mean,
and
you got more to gain than
you do. I think I read after the game that he's one of the most conservative coaches when it comes to punting and situations like that. So he played to his standard, and it cost him the game. Yeah. So, oops, he's going to cost him his job too.
Yeah, it probably is. And to the surprise of at least none of the three of us, Keaton Slovis was far and away the more effective former USC quarterback.
Well, yeah, he was.
Hey, JT made it through a game.
Yeah, JT made it through a game, and he was actually somewhat dealing. So
JT was all right, but I just sometimes I feel like Pat Narduzzi like gets like reverted back to playing like Woody Hayes football, and he just wants to run the ball when they need to keep passing, and it works.
We're gonna run the football,
basically.
We're gonna run football. Way better. Get an I formation. We're gonna run. We're I formation. We're gonna full back dive. I formation. We're gonna power counter and ISO. And we're gonna run it over and over and over again, Coach. You just gotta do it. That's the way you win, Coach. That's just the way to win.
Run the damn ball, Bubba.
Run the damn ball, Bubba. Yeah, that's high school football in the South. If you guys didn't pick up on that,
yeah, I got that one.
I go to a coach's clinic, and that's all you hear, Coach. I don't know about all this spread stuff, Coach. We just gotta run the damn ball. We just gotta run it, Coach. We're just gonna line up. We're gonna get in the wing tee. We're just gonna pound it, pound the rock. We're gonna pound the rock. That's what we're going to do. Pound it. Pound the rock. Run the ball. By God, number 24 gets he gets lathered up. But by God, we're going to feed him. We're going to feed him the rock. Enough of this willy-nilly spread crap. I just need to go to a session where they're going to talk about running the football. That's what we do.
You know who runs sessions on running the football? You know who runs parents. A darn good session on running the football?
2 hours, man. The worst 2 hours you'll ever watch in your life. It's boring, too, to boot. It's not even exciting.
Well, another game.
There's a coach in Michigan. His name's Pat Fox. Mm-hmm. His offense is – I couldn't even describe his offense, but he's so fun to listen to that I actually watched it and learned a few things. It was good. He coaches at Notre Dame. Prep in Michigan.
Shout out to Notre Dame Prep in Michigan.
Pat Fox.
Yeah.
He's good. I like him a lot.
Shout out to Pat Fox. All right. We'll head down from Notre Dame Prep in Michigan down to Columbus, Ohio, where there was a surprisingly low scoring affair that took place in the Horseshoe, Josh. It was you know, people thought Ohio State's offense was going to come out, you know, firing, you know, scoring 55 points a game. That's not what happened here. Was my question for you, though, like, to me, in a lot of ways, Notre Dame was more impressive in defeat than Ohio State was in victory. And maybe that's just expectations, right? Or for me, do you agree?
I think there's a lot there to agree with. So first of all, what was Notre Dame doing so well that we loved? They stole a page right out of the NFL. They looked at how did teams slow down Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes and stuff last year, and they basically copied and pasted the two safety high look, kept everything in front of them, prevented the big play. It was really smart, really effective. It gave Ohio State fits. You know, C.J. Stroud's a really good quarterback, but he's not, you know, an NFL quarterback just yet. So he's still kind of learning how to face those pro schemes. Where Notre Dame lost it, it was a 3rd and 11 at the 24, and they tried to mix it up, and they blitzed both safeties, and they finally left Ohio State in single coverage, and it was a dart for a 24-yard touchdown that made it 14-10, gave Ohio State the lead. And then secondary to that, Notre Dame on their following drive was moving the ball really well. They kind of had a dumb attempted kick return that didn't go anywhere. They returned it 11 yards to their own 13-yard line. Maybe just take the 25-yard line there on a fair catch. So on that next series, they had a 32-yard pass play, a 14-yard pass play, offensive pass interference that put them behind the chains. Nice little 7-yard run to get some of that back. But on 2nd and 18, they ran it again. And I actually thought they were much more effective passing the ball. Tyler Buchner ended 10 of 18 for a 177. I would have liked on that 2nd and 18 to let him rip and try and pick up that first down, be aggressive. Ohio State assumes you're going to try and just get a little bit of it back to set up a more manageable 3rd and 10. I would have kept my foot on the gas. You already had two really nice pass plays on that drive. So, yeah, Notre Dame did a lot of nifty stuff defensively, and I think they could have been a little bit more aggressive offensively. I think Buchner showed that he's got some chops. For Ohio State, I was really trying to figure out, like, what was going on? Was it just the Notre Dame defense? Was there something more there? And I kind of had a weird theory that I want Coach to tell me if I'm onto something here. Coach, is it possible that you have so many mouths to feed, you no longer have the alpha on your team, and you start to break your own rhythm by trying to spread the ball around too much?
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, I think with some play designs, you have too many built-in great options. There always needs to be somebody that's on a clear out, somebody that's a decoy, somebody that you know without a shadow of a doubt they're not getting the ball. And you have to have play designs, you know, a couple things for this guy, a couple things for that guy, a couple things for that guy. You can satisfy those needs. But I think when you give your quarterback too many options on any given play, it's not more so the weapons that they have. It's more so the play designs where you're trying to do too much and read too much and maybe trying to make everybody a primary option when that just can't be possible. Because Georgia had the same problem. They won 49-3 and were almost flawless executing offensively. So it's more of a scheme thing than it is a player's thing, because you want to have weapons, but you've got to effectively say, okay, for these handful of play designs, it's coming to you unless, and that's got to be the rule of thumb. And everybody else knows that. And then everybody else knows that they've got a set of things that, hey, it's coming to me unless, and that's how you manage that. And it's on the play sheet. It's out. It's written out by a player. Like Michael Mayer would have his own section on the play sheet that's dedicated to him. It's like three or four of your best plays that primarily target Michael Mayer.
Yeah. So that way, if you find the matchup in the game that's working, you can say, okay, I can keep going back to this guy, but you know, bring in different concepts in there. Yeah, Josh, I think there's something to that. You know, Smith and Jigbo was in and out with some injuries in the game, so we'll see what. I'm sure it's nothing long term that's to be too worried about, but clearly they have plenty of receivers who are quite capable there in Columbus. Let's head down to the Swamp. Big upset in Billy Napier's debut for the Gators in, you know, at home against a top 10 ranked Utah team. I was convinced that going down the field at the end of the game, Coach, I mean, you and I were texting during this, that Utah was going to score, and maybe they got away with a little bit, right? Maybe, you know, Florida got a little bit lucky getting away with a face mask there on that final interception. But, you know, Florida still won the game, and Florida still probably deserved to win the game. So that begs the question then, Coach, how would Dan Mullen have lost this game for the Gators?
I don't think he would have been in position to lose the game. I think they would have lost it a long time ago. He's probably not playing Anthony Richardson. Emory Jones is probably still on campus, and he's probably still playing, first of all. Second of all, I just don't think they play with the same intensity under Dan Mullen that they do. Like, this team played extremely hard under Billy Napier. This team actually, like, believed in themselves. They didn't beat themselves. They didn't shoot themselves in the foot. Utah, they made Utah go out and execute and earn every single touchdown. And they did. I think that proves that Florida's a really good team and they should be taken seriously. And Utah is going to actually be a really good team because they went into a hostile environment in the Swamp and they put up 26 points and had a chance to win the game at the end. Bad mistake there by Cameron Rising. Just not a good throw, not a good decision. I think he was a little bit panicked on that. But I just think that just the overall resilience of the Florida ball club, because Utah did a few good things early that would have knocked last year's Florida team right on out. And this game would have been 34-10 in favor of Utah. And it would have half the Swamp would have been cleared out in the third quarter. But Billy Napier, they hung in there. They kept fighting. They kept chomping. And you like my pun there? And they made plays when it mattered. They were poised. And that's the biggest difference from last year's Florida team to this year's Florida team, is the poise, the confidence, the resiliency to go and make plays. And Anthony Richardson finally had some confidence. And you see what he looks like now with some confidence. Last year, he didn't have that.
Yeah, and he looked like a completely different player to me, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was, Coach, you mentioned that confidence. And I think that I'm amazed at how much
they have a scheme that fits him.
Well, yeah, but like Billy Napier has clearly enabled him and enabled in a good way,
yeah.
Right? And enabled him in a good way and given him this responsibility. He's clearly like, he's got that athletic profile that like, he's like Josh Allen-ish out there, man. Like, I hate to say it, you know, as a Bills fan, that's very high praise, but he's Josh Allen out there for me.
Yeah, I mean, as much crap as I gave Billy Napier about his Butch Jones vibes with all the goofy things he did in the offseason with the game changer coordinator and the I Like to Practice award and, you know, all that goofy stuff and all the goofy stuff that Jeff Collins does and Butch Jones did and PJ Fleck with the Row the Boat, you know, Jeff Collins still hanging on to his Waffle House cup, you know, that stuff. But Billy Napier actually went out
for this
and prepared this team.
Iowa's no, get just, that safety.
The safety dance.
Yeah.
So the safety dance. But all the frills went away, and it was business time for the Gators, and that's what matters. All of that recruiting stuff, all of the photo shoots and the branding and all that stuff, Billy Napier is able to put that, leave that to the recruiting staff and the marketing staff, and he goes out and coaches the team, which is what I was looking for in this hire, because you see all the goofy stuff and you're just like, okay, at what point do we draw the line here and say, okay, now you got to go coach this team and stop worrying about it. Jeff Collins still doesn't know that line. PJ Fleck, it's debatable. Butch Jones definitely doesn't know that line. Billy Napier, he knows the line. He knows where it's at.
I saw some really weird, you know, opening day jitters from Utah that, I'm sure they're kicking themselves over
weather played a bigger factor in this game because it rained and it was humid.
Well, I had a few that I wanted to throw out there. So when it was 10-7, Utah was having a nice drive. They got down to a 3rd and 3 at the Florida 8. They take a timeout. What do they do coming out of the timeout? They have a delay of game. Oops.
Delay of game back. Coming out of a timeout is so embarrassing.
Yeah, it so is. that one was kind of weird. I can't tell you
that it hasn't happened to me. I think it gets every offensive coordinator at least once.
Yeah. So there's a red zone trip that ended with just 3 points. And then another one, I mean, kind of the opposite of Neil Brown. It's 4th and goal at Florida's 1. They've run it into the heart of Florida's defense 3 times in a row. And it didn't work. And if they had taken a field goal, it would have given them a 16-14 lead in a very tight contested game, and it would have been midway through the third quarter. So they would have had a lead midway through the third quarter. 3 straight runs of nothing. They run it again a 4th time right into the gut of the defense. No gain.
I don't mind the call to go for it. I don't like the play call, but I don't mind the decision to go for it. I mean, if I'm going to crucify,
I was going to say,
I think in that juncture of the game though, their defense was playing so well, and Florida was only at 2 touchdowns. It would have given Utah the lead.
Go for it.
Yeah, but I feel like at that point, points on are kind the road, of at a premium.
On the road, your defense is playing good, and they had obviously started moving the ball whenever they. I mean, you go for a different play call, obviously, but you. I mean, I don't mind the decision to go for that. I really don't.
They needed to get Cam Rising. You put
your team. You say, hey, we got Tavion Thomas. We got Cam Rising. We can get a damn yard. It obviously didn't work out. We can, you know, it's the same reason that. You know, I'm getting after Neil Brown for not going for it. Like, you know, scared money don't make money. And you got to – sometimes you just got to be aggressive and get out of your own way. You can't be conservative on the road.
I usually like to be aggressive too. I just feel like with points at an absolute premium, getting a lead right there in the second half, I think would have helped.
It was a stupid play call. It was a dumb play call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, whether you go for it or kick it, it was the 4th down play calls.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that not once in those 4 plays got Cam Rising like on a boot action of some sort. He's so much better on the run than he is.
Get somebody on the edge. Come on, guys. Do something. Yeah. Do something different. Don't run up the gut.
Well, a team that likes to run up the gut, that would be Arkansas. And what do you know? They did it again. They ran and they ran and they ran. And KJ Jefferson.
This is good.
KJ Jefferson is a refrigerator with legs. And Josh.
No, that's Jordan Davis.
Well, at the quarterback position, he is at least because, man, Josh, what I'm worried about, I mean, we have all like grown to like really enjoy watching Arkansas play football. But I'm worried, yeah. Josh. Like, do you think he can continue to shoulder this much of an offensive burden every single game for 12 weeks?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say yes.
He'll get some help eventually.
I got some stats to back it up. For some reason, my stats are not wanting to load on my computer right now. Good thing I had the exact same tabs open on my phone. So,
Raheem Sanders had a great game for Arkansas.
He did.
Yeah. So Mr. Jefferson last year, 294 passing attempts and 146 rushing attempts. Matt, you want to hold those numbers in your head?
246, 146, so was it?
294 146. Passing attempts. Yeah.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. And he is currently listed at 6'3", 245. So, all right. Well, let me find another high-usage SEC quarterback from recent memory. This player had in his last year of college, 314 pass attempts and 217 runs. And he, at the combine, was listed at about 6'3", 236. So, same height, 10 pounds less. And Matt, you were holding those numbers. Who had more usage?
The
KJ Jefferson or the second guy?
The second guy.
Yeah. The second guy was Tim Tebow.
I thought that was going to be Dak Prescott.
No. I wanted to go with Tebow. Because I thought, you know, might as well go with coach's favorite quarterback. No, it's not easy, but it's not easy, but it's doable. And there is a pathway there. Dak Prescott, I could have looked up his numbers. I'm sure they're fairly similar. But Tebow essentially had junior year similar numbers as well in terms of workload. Yep. So, yeah, it's totally doable. Arkansas knows if he goes down, they're screwed. But, hey, what team's not completely screwed when their starting quarterback goes down? That's
Iowa, because it's probably an upgrade.
Well, I was going to say for about 90% of teams, your season's pretty much done. So, you know, put the ball in your best player's hand every snap. Why not? Makes sense.
Coach, anything to add on this game?
I mean, you know, I think you're starting to kind of see some options emerge for Arkansas. You know, Jadon Haselwood scored. Trey Knox had a pair of touchdowns. You know, you had some good things out of the running game. I think the more they get and the more times that they can get other people chipping in and not just KJ Jefferson, the better off they will be. Because they got off to a slow start in this game. But I think once they kind of finally started getting some things rolling and getting on the same page, and because he had so many new skill guys around him that, you know, the chemistry in game takes that. And Cincinnati's pretty good at defense too. And they had a good game plan for KJ Jefferson, and that helped Cincinnati along this. But I think if they were to play Cincinnati in like 4 weeks, this would be a totally different ball game, probably a blowout.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Coach. I think that Arkansas is rounding into being a really, really good team. So those are the major games we wanted to cover here. Just a couple other quick notes. I just wanted to mention that Virginia Tech lost to Old Dominion in Brent Pry's debut as head coach. That's Virginia Tech's second consecutive loss to Old Dominion, and they have a contract to play them every year for 10 years. Secondly, if anyone, I hope other people watch Boston College Rutgers, it was sometimes a comedy of errors. For instance, Rutgers had three different quarterbacks on their first three plays from scrimmage. That did not go well. Rutgers also managed to have a fourth and goal from the 43-yard line that they punted on. Nonetheless, they still won the game. So good on you, Scarlet Knights. Coach, you got anything else to add here from the end of week one?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at you got to look at some of the early games, and one that stood out to me, and I was flipping back and forth between that and the Iowa game, and it was North Carolina Appy State.
Yeah,
that was a fun 63-61 thriller. And that was so much fun to watch. I think I didn't watch a ton of it. I was doing things around the house. I was flipping back and forth. I was preparing ribs to go on the smoker. We were just doing here, there, and everywhere. Type Saturday morning, Saturday early afternoon. Things that you do if you're a football coach and you're not home very much during the week. So from what I saw this game, it just seemed like that both offenses were dialed in. May, the quarterback at UNC, is the real deal. Chase Bryce, the quarterback at Appy State, is the real deal. And I think both teams are going to be good. And defense was definitely optional on this day. I don't think that's going to be the norm, but it was definitely optional on this day.
Well, I don't know, man. They had trouble stopping FAMU the week before And, you know, they, you know, Josh, they brought Gene Tissick out of retirement for this.
Yes, they did.
Josh, you got anything else to add from week one?
I had a couple games that I wanted to throw at some people. So the first one, not a team that any of us were too high on, the Arizona Wildcats. They went up to San Diego State and over to San Diego State, opening up the Aztec brand new stadium, and Arizona dominated them for 60 minutes. Yeah. And Jaden Delora was just darn right phenomenal.
And
against
so was Jacob Cowing, the UTEP transfer at receiver. Yeah. Oh man, he is good.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe we're reading too much into it, but might have to reevaluate Arizona's ceiling based on how crisp they looked against what's historically a pretty good defensive team. Also staying out in the Pac-12, Oregon State looked like the real deal. They were up 24-0 on Boise State at halftime. We had some real concerns in our preview show about Boise State and the much up and down, Boise State fans would say much maligned, Hank Bachmeier won the starting job again in camp. He opened up his season 4 of 8, 30 yards, 2 picks. And Talon Green played pretty well, especially in the second half as the Broncos tried to get back into it. But two things to keep a note of with that one, especially with Oregon State, who I had as a bowling team. I can't remember what you guys had. And then over in the Big Ten, Indiana, kind of a surprise winner there against Illinois. So hats off to them for getting off the schneid. Also, the Big Ten, the Gopher defense looked like the real deal. I know people are going to say it's New Mexico State. But when you hold a team to 6 first downs, 91 total yards, 53 passing yards, 38 rushing yards, 1.8 average per carry and shut them out. And then the time of possession is hilarious. Minnesota, 44 minutes and 30 seconds of time of possession. I mean, I don't care that it's New Mexico State. That was pretty impressive. And then finally, I'm surprised neither of you guys brought it up. The slaughter featuring your boys from Murfreesboro, James Madison,
yep.
debut in FBS, 44-7.
That was gross.
Slap Middle Tennessee with a cold glass of water.
Oh my God, that was awful.
Like they needed to Bielema Stockstill at that game in Murfreesboro. First game of the season.
They need to Bielema Stockstill. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the tunnel.
And I love this stat line. So James Madison threw for almost 300 yards, but two people at the lion's share. The two leading receiver for the Dukes, Chris Thornton, 12 receptions, 155, 3 touchdowns. Reggie Brown, 5 receptions, 78, 2 touchdowns.
Gosh. Whew. That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. All right, Jeff.
That is.
Before we get to our week two previews, time for a pop quiz. You guys know how this works. As of yesterday, NFL rosters are set for week one. And just as importantly, cap figures are now locked in for the season. Gentlemen, name the 10 schools, the top 10 schools that have the most salary cap allocation this year. So not the most players, but whose players are making the most money this year. Coach, I will start with you.
It's got to be Texas A&M.
No, in the pros, my friend. In the pros.
Oh, in the pros.
Yes, which NFL, not NIL joke. Players. No. Which NFL, which schools?
I mean, Texas A&M is pro, right?
Which schools NFL players are making the most money this year against the cap?
Players or teams?
Players. So what schools? So, like, for example, it's not one of them. Like, West Virginia.
I'm okay. Yeah. Okay. I got you. It's going to be I'm gonna say Alabama.
That is correct. Alabama is number two with $230.1 million in salary this year. Josh.
Nice. Let's see. I am going to go with Ohio State.
That is correct. Ohio State's number one, $253.3 million.
Okay.
Coach.
Okay, I'm going to go with Tennessee.
Sorry, Coach. Ooh. That is incorrect. Josh, you're up.
They have a lot of players in the league.
Yeah. all I have to say is
No.
All I have to say is and I get the dig. I'm going to go a little bit off the wall. Both Russell Wilson and TJ Watt have huge deals, so I'm going to say Wisconsin.
I wouldn't be doing this if Wisconsin wasn't on it. They are number six, $126.7 million.
There we go.
Coach.
I'm going to say Oklahoma.
That is correct. They are number five, $138.5 million. Josh.
Does having two quarterbacks get North Dakota State up there? This is not my real guess. This was me making a joke.
one's on a rookie contract.
He is on a rookie contract. I am gonna. I have no idea if any other players from his team are there, but I know Patrick Mahomes has a huge deal, so I'm gonna go with Texas Tech.
Correct.
I figured how many other Red Raiders were.
Okay. I'm going to go with, let's see. I'm trying to think of who all had holdout deals.
Going to need an answer.
Yeah, I know you are. Hold on.
Great audio. We'll listen to
South Carolina.
Make a joke about Wyoming to stall.
South Carolina is incorrect. Josh.
I kind of spaced out for a second as I was trying to think about it. Did anyone say Oklahoma yet?
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
Good answer, bro. So
that's what I thought you said Oklahoma. Let's see. LSU?
LSU is number three, $208 million.
LSU?
And that's even without Joe Burrow's being
on that's with Joe Burrow contract being on a rookie. Yet. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and Justin Jefferson all on rookie contracts. It's all going to Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, it is. The U.
Sorry, Coach. That is incorrect.
I thought so.
One more guess.
I'm going to be a homer. Brian Bulaga, few tight ends in the league. Is Iowa in this?
No. They're in the top 10 of number and players, but not an amount of money they are making. You guys got number one, Ohio State, number two, Alabama, number three, LSU. You missed number four, Clemson. You guys got number five, Oklahoma, number six, Wisconsin. Coach, you should slap yourself. You forgot number seven, Georgia.
I didn't think we were that much of a pain in the ass in the salary cap, but I guess we were.
Matt Stafford begs to differ. number eight, Mississippi State. That was the biggest Jack shock Prescott on the list. Number nine, USC, and number 10, Michigan. I hit ding for your because I thought you were saying UM. So we are now going to
say UM. The wrong one, probably,
you
right?
You said the U, not UM.
Well, they are UM.
Anyhow, we head into week two.
Starting, so who won that? Did we tie?
Josh won 4-3.
Of course you did.
Ooh. What's the season?
It's tied up one.
I think it's
tied 1-1.
I was gonna say last week, Coach, you kicked my butt and down the
Coach kicked your butt. Field. So it's now tied 1-1. Anyways, moving on to our week two preview. We start in the great state of Texas. Alabama is headed to take on the Longhorns. Josh, how much is Texas gonna lose by? Basic question.
Is this a question for gambling purposes?
No, this is just a Josh, how much is Texas going to get killed by?
Yeah, the spread's about 3 touchdowns. I kind of expect Alabama to cover that. I mean, Texas is rebuilding. We obviously know that, but I think this is also a statement game for Alabama. It's been a while since they've had a true non-conference road game. They've played some neutral site games, but this is a true roadie. I think that Saban's been hearing some of that stuff. I've seen a whole bunch of people say, oh, historically, Texas is 7-1-1 in the series. And that stuff just pisses Saban off. And when he's pissed off, his team comes out pissed off. And then when his team comes out pissed off, that's when you get blown out.
Yeah, I've got Alabama winning by about 34, Coach. I mean, is there anything Texas can do in this game?
I mean, I guess if you get a few turnovers, if you disrupt Bryce Young and get your home crowd into it, sure.
Yeah, if, how many people have been able to disrupt Bryce Young outside of Georgia's
defense? Not many.
Title game.
Not many at all.
And let me tell you something. I don't think Texas has any first-round picks on this defense, and Georgia had
they
like
don't.
11.
So. Their closest thing to a first-round pick is Bevo. Mm. I mean, he could disrupt Bryce Young.
I mean, the smell could.
Yes, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, obviously football is a weird sport and sometimes weird
Football's
things happen.
Weird
but,
yeah.
And, you know, you get a couple unlucky bounces and momentum can really kind of snowball. And Alabama's not immune to that. I'm not saying they're going to lose by any stretch because I still think they're going to win by 31 points. But they're going to. I still think they're going to pimp slap Texas, but
it's going to get ugly.
I mean, if Quinn Ewers gets in a rhythm, I don't know. There's a chance, but yeah, you know, there's always a chance, but sometimes those chances are higher than other times.
Yeah. I think this is maybe this is a Nick Saban makes a statement about an Arch Manning game. So you wanted to go here. Well then. That's fine. You can see what happens.
You wanted to go here. We're gonna put an ass whooping on you.
Gonna see a lot of running the ball though in this game. Unfortunately, the Southern ball coaches will not approve.
This will not be one to host at the clinics. That's for sure. It'll be a fun one to watch.
All right,
a little bit.
Well, let's talk about another SEC team or two teams here in a matchup, I should say. We've got Kentucky and Florida. Last year was a great game between these two teams. Kentucky mm-hmm. won in Florida for the first time since like the 80s, or I guess that was 2 years ago. Back in Florida again this year. Coach, I mean, Utah had trouble with Anthony Richardson. What approach do you think Kentucky is going to take defensively to try to slow him down?
Well, I think Kentucky honestly has more players up front that can deal with this kind of thing. I think the overall talent in that defensive line and that linebacking core for Kentucky is slightly better than Utah's. I think Utah gets away with a lot of stuff scheme wise. I think they're well coached and they tackle well in space, but for Kentucky, they just have to push the pocket, try not to give any run lanes and disrupt Anthony Richardson's rhythm, which is easy to do. If you get him off his spot, sometimes he doesn't always know how to handle it. He didn't make perfect throws all the time. There's times where in that Utah game where he wasn't poised. So I think being able to hit him, get him running sideways, I think the overall team speed at Kentucky is going to be a little bit greater than what they saw last week. They're a little bit more adapt to the weather that you typically see in Gainesville, Florida this time of year. And I think Mark Stoops is a really good defensive mind, and he's proved that now year in and year out at Kentucky, where you think, okay, this is the year where they are going to suck now because they lost insert their best defensive player. And they haven't. They've gotten better and they've reloaded and they've recruited well. So I think the game plan to contain Anthony Richardson is contain him on the edges, push the pocket in the middle, get your hands up, and disrupt the receivers and disrupt the timing of everything. Play press man coverage because they can do that, and see where that takes you. Force him to push the ball downfield.
Yeah, I think coach. I think hit a lot for this game, but one thing I'm looking at is you've got senior quarterback Will Levis for Kentucky. I mean, he's pretty much seen it all in his career. I don't think he'll be as intimidated with the swamp as say a freshman quarterback would be. So I think that's a huge thing helping Kentucky in this game.
All right. I feel like Florida might be in for a bit of a letdown. I feel like they might be riding so high off of last week. I would really worry about that if I'm a Gator fan right now. So if I were picking this game, I actually might take I know Florida is probably the betting favorite at this point. I think I might take Kentucky if I were to bet on this one.
I think Florida's like 7.5 or 7-point favorite. Favorite.
I'll definitely take Kentucky then.
Let me pull up our handy dandy bet online. And I will tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
with the classic hangover.
Yeah, classic hangover game, and Kentucky's chomping at the bit. You know they are, and Will Levis. This is definitely going to be a prove it spot for him.
It's 5.5.
All right. Thank you to our
friends. Favor of Florida.
BetOnline.ag, Florida -5.5 right now. I'd probably still honestly take Kentucky. I like Kentucky mm-hmm. to win all right. So, but that is not part of thread formations. Those are coming up in a little bit. Right now, though,
I like Kentucky here too.
Baylor, BYU. This is a wild, interesting, out of conference top 25 matchup here. BYU has been very good for a couple of seasons now. Baylor, obviously. The reigning Big 12 champs, and have one of our favorite coaches in the business, Dave Aranda. This is a sort of a styles make fights kind of matchup for me, because I think these two teams are going to be very, very different in terms of sort of how they approach, especially offense. BYU has had a high-flying attack for a while, Josh. What do the Baylor Bears need to do to slow them down?
Well, I was looking at what Baylor did last year. Their offense was very, very strong last year. One of the more electric offenses out there, keyed by Jaren Hall, their quarterback. And I noticed something interesting. In BYU's two losses, Jaren Hall had over 300 passing yards. And I was like, oh, okay. So what did Boise State and Baylor do to beat BYU a season ago? Both games were kind of one was kind of a shootout. Baylor beat them 38-24, but they made BYU one dimensional. They held the Cougs to just 67 rushing yards, 2.8 per carry. Boise State beat them 26-17, and they also kind of made BYU one dimensional. BYU had 111 rushing yards, took them 27 carries to get there. So I think the common theme is BYU is going to pass, but you don't want to also get beat by their running game. This one is a football no-brainer, but you also don't want to get blown out in the first quarter. That's what South Florida did. They were down 28-0 after one quarter. So you got to kind of survive that opening quarter in what's going to be an electric stadium there. In Provo. Obviously, you're going to have to deal with some altitude. I don't know if BYU is, or if Baylor is going to be used to that. But for me, it's not so much necessarily slowing anything about BYU down. It's just making them one-dimensional and say, hey, you know what? Jaren is probably going to have 300 yards, but if we make him take 50 passes to get there and they don't do anything running the ball, we'll live with that. Because that's what Baylor did last year to win this game.
Yeah. Coach, you got anything to hop on top of that one?
This is going to be interesting because, I've been so heavy on the Baylor bandwagon because of Dave Aranda, not because of other things. But defensively, they've been stout, and I have no reason to doubt that they can come in there and do the necessary things they need to stop it. But – then again, BYU is explosive. And so it's like kind of what breaks first. And I think Dave Aranda is very meticulous. He's very disciplined. He's very, I guess you could say meticulous. I guess I use that word again. Detail oriented in his game planning. And I think you're going to see Baylor play some great defense here. And I think if you weighed BYU's explosive offense, Baylor's stout defense, I think Baylor's going to kind of roll in this one.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how Blake Shapen looks too, as sort of you know, in a much bigger test here in week two. All right. Second to last game we're going to talk about here in depth, Tennessee and Pittsburgh. Pitt coming off of the big win in the backyard brawl. Tennessee's offense looked great last week, but again, they were not exactly facing the strongest of opponents in Ball State. They still won 59-10. Coach, will either defense be able to stop the other team? Because I could see this one being just, 80, 90, 100 total points.
Yeah, Vegas doesn't think so. Vegas has got the over-under set at 66.5.
I know.
Tennessee favored by 6.5.
Way over.
I'm taking the over on that for sure. I think you have two great quarterbacks, and the defenses are actually pretty good, but pretty good relatively to what the team is. But it's tough to say the defense is going to exist anywhere in this. I mean, I think it could possibly, and if it does, it's going to be on the Pitt side. I think Pitt will stop Tennessee before Tennessee stops Pitt. But, you're going to see two really good transfer quarterbacks that didn't make too much of an impact, that didn't make a ton of impact at the places they're coming from, but making significant impacts where they are now. Keaton Slovis versus Hendon Hooker. And for me, I'm going to take Hendon Hooker. I'm going to take the SEC talent here over the ACC. The ACC is so volatile, and what team is going to rise above the rest of the pile. But I think Tennessee is going to be – I think Tennessee's going to be really, really good this year, and they're going to show it in this game. This is going to be the game where everybody's like, okay, Tennessee's for real. And it's going to be a lot of the reason is for Hendon Hooker. And mic drop.
Josh?
Boom.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, I'm with you, actually. I was kind of surprised that the Vegas over-under is kind of in the 60s. I'm with you. I'm expecting a high-scoring affair. I'll say one thing that might be something Tennessee's not necessarily expecting, and that's a home crowd at Pittsburgh. They came out for that backyard brawl, celebrating last year's title team. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since the city of Pittsburgh's really supported this college team the way they did back in the old Dan Marino era. But
I think the last time they formally had this kind of buzz at all was Larry Fitzgerald.
I know. And Walt Harris was like the most boring coach ever. He never even used Larry Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, formerly Heinz Field was rocking a week ago. This Tennessee team, this is a true road trip for them. They're still kind of getting their feet wet on the season, and I'm just excited for this one. Really, this is one game that I had circled as one of the more exciting games of the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I like Pitt at home here. I don't know. It's probably a bit of a homer pick for me, but I like Pitt at home. I like the way that they, were able to come back and pull it out last week. And I think that they are I think that they're in good shape. I think they are just a good team. And I don't think Tennessee's offensive line might be as good. I don't think they may not be as good as West Virginia's. And I think that Pitt's defensive front, with Kansi and the lot, are very, very good.
Well, they get the ball out so quick.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was, Slovis is the perfect guy for that. So accurate. Mm-hmm. So, but Josh, we got to finish our main segment here talking a little Cy-Hawk trophy action. It's in Iowa City this year. So, Josh, my question for you, in what creative way will Iowa score 10 points this week? Now, I think there's a couple ways to go. There's the classic five safety. There's...
Okay.
But I'm curious what you think is going to happen.
They're going to score 3 points on a free kick.
All right. Well, I alluded to Iowa State's performance earlier in the show. Let me give the stats on it. Most people probably didn't see this. It was Iowa State taking on FCS Southeast Missouri State, affectionately called SEMO. And Iowa State has a bunch of new quarterback, new running back, kind of a mix of old and new coming together, and the new faces looked really good. Hunter Decker's 293, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, 25 of 31. And then their new look running back, Brock, I'm blanking on his first name. But he had 100 yards, over 6 yards per carry. Jerry Brock, there it is. He was really like kind of reminded me of Breece Hall a little bit that when I was watching some tape on them. But the reality is Iowa's defense is a million times better than SEMO's. And just last year, what happened? Iowa had 173 total yards. Iowa State had 339, but we won 27-17. How? Well, Iowa State had 4 turnovers. One of the interceptions set up a nice drive for Iowa, a 50-yard drive. One of the fumbles was returned for a touchdown. Iowa has not lost to Campbell. They've won 6 straight. And time and time again in this series, Iowa State shoots themselves in the foot. They are the sloppier team. They have more turnovers in it. It's called El Asico for a reason, because usually both teams play complete crap football. And when it's going to be a sloppy, crappy, grinded out game, you're going to trust the team with a most likely top 15 defense nationally, one of the best special teams unit in the country, the best punter in the country. Iowa has yet another rock solid kicker. He went 1 for 2 on field goals, but both of his field goals were over 45 yards, and he just absolutely demolished both of them. I think he could sniff 60 for his range. And, Iowa State, they didn't play anybody a week ago. Southeast Missouri State is not a good FCS team. Iowa at least had a tougher opponent. So it would not surprise me, with all the doom and gloom going on in Hawkeye Nation, for Iowa to actually win this game.
Coach, you got anything to add on to that?
I think Josh said it so eloquently there.
Who are we to talk about El Asico? So
El Asico.
Well, with that,
that's such a perfect name, man.
We need to move on to our spread formations. We had the best spread formations, and we had probably the best week in the history of the show. Josh, congratulations! 5-0 last week.
You freaking killed it, dude.
Yep. Bringing you, which is good because you started the season 1-5, bringing you to 6-5 on the season. Coach, you went 3-2 last week.
I'm like Brian. I was just kind of struggling week 0. Now I'm going to get going.
Coach, Coach, you went 3-2 last week to also move to 6-5, and I went 4-1 to move to 7-4. We start this week with an interesting non-conference matchup. We have Washington State in Camp Randall Stadium. Badgers 17-point favorites at home, over under 49. Coach, you are up first this week. What do you like?
Ooh, okay. So this one is, I picked this one last night actually on our show. I'm a big fan of Wisconsin. I think they're going to cover. I think Wisconsin is going to win by 20 in this one. I like Washington State, but They traveled to Camp Randall. Braylon Allen had a great game. I was kind of worried coming into the season what Wisconsin was going to look like offensively with the new coordinator. They showed me something, and I think they have enough to cover this. So give me the Badgers.
Josh.
Yeah, Cougs are a team we like projecting forward, kind of projecting down the line. Still some kinks to work out with a new staff doing it full time now. Pretty rough look, barely beating Idaho 24-17. Pac-12 teams traveling east, not a pretty track record. I'm going to take Wisconsin to cover this as well.
Right. I am.
We know where you're going.
I'm going under 49.
Wazoo.
No, I'm going under 49 is where I'm going in this game. Wazoo, I was surprised how much they struggled to move the ball against Idaho. Utah was okay offensively, but definitely not great. There is still a lot of improvement to be had. So I don't know if they're going to win by 17, but I've got it under 49 for sure. I mean, I could see this being like a 24-7 kind of game. So let's move on from there. We then go to another Pac-12 team on the road, but this time it's Oregon State, who we talked about earlier. They're at Fresno State. Beavers, 1-point favorite on the road, over under 60.5. Coach, what side are you on?
Ooh, I mean, Oregon State showed me something last week against Boise. You know, I had Fresno picked as the Mountain West champions, but I like the Beavers here. It's basically a pick 'em, so all they have to do is win. I don't know. There's something about Oregon State.
All right, Josh.
Yeah, we didn't learn a whole lot about Fresno in their opening game. They stepped down in FCS to Cal Poly. Blew them out in the first quarter, 21-0. They were kind of just coasting from there on out, 35-7 winners. Pretty impressive stats when you look at it, 549 total yards. But I'm with Coach. I've liked this Oregon State team since our preview show. I had them going bowling. I actually think Fresno might be looking a little bit past to their big trip to the Coliseum, where knocking off in-state Big Brother would mean a whole lot to them. It does give me pause that Oregon State's in the Pac-12 and Fresno would love to knock off a Power 5 team. But I think Oregon State has a little bit more to kind of play for in this one, because their path to a bowl, they need to do well in the non-conference. So I'm going to take the Beavers.
I am also tepidly going to take the Beavers, which means that they are definitely not going to cover because we all chose them to. All right.
Oh, boy.
Let's move on to an SEC matchup. We have got South Carolina headed to Arkansas. Arkansas, 8.5-point favorites at home, over under 53.5, Coach. Who you got here in this cross-divisional SEC matchup?
This one's easy. Rattler had the worst QBR in the conference. I like Arkansas here, -8.5, and I'm going to take the over.
Coach doubling down. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been singing Arkansas's praises since it was a bit of burying the lead. One of my best friends of the world is an Arkansas alum. I've got a blind spot there for them, but I just got done comparing KJ Jefferson to a previous Heisman Trophy winner in terms of workload and body type and stuff. Arkansas just beat a really, really good Cincinnati team. Meanwhile, South Carolina, talk about not learning anything. They played Georgia State, and it was a really rather unimpressive 35-14 win. I'm not entirely sure what South Carolina, you can say, did well other than win the game. 3 of 14 on third down, only 306 total yards, 227 of those passing, but 2 interceptions, 79 rushing yards. They, on the flip side, gave up 200 rushing yards. That is a major red flag. I'm with Coach. I'm going Arkansas big.
Georgia State runs for 200 yards. What can Arkansas do? I mean, just, yeah. I mean, give me the pigs all day. Let's, another SEC team heading west to Tucson. Mississippi State in Arizona. Mississippi State is a 10.5-point favorite at Arizona. Over under 59, Coach.
Ooh. See, this one's a little bit tougher because Mississippi State's traveling across the country. And it's a big number for Mississippi State. But I'm going to go ballsy here. I'm going to say Mississippi State's going to cover. I'm not touching that over-under, but I'm going to say Mississippi State's going to cover.
I really liked what Arizona did on the road at San Diego State. I think Mississippi State knows that they have a golden opportunity in a week at LSU, a team that was has some kinks to work out, to say the least. I think they might actually be looking past. And for Arizona, they're one of those hungry teams where, like, they know they're going to have some clunker games along the way. Like, they could get blown out by USC for all we know. And they're going to be eager to, like, hey, this is a manageable home game. Let's get our ducks in a row. So I'm going to say Arizona covers, because I think there's an intriguing possibility that Arizona pulls off an upset.
Wow.
Could happen. It is the Pirate.
It could happen. All I know is I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game, so I'm just going over 59. I don't have a pulse either way, but I feel like both teams are going to score. I mean, I think we know Delore is a good quarterback. Cowing's a good receiver. They've got a freshman, McMillan, who's ridiculous at Arizona. Just give me the over. Finally, we've got the Brainiac Bowl. Duke and Northwestern are facing off in Ryan Field. Josh, you could head over to the game if you really want to. Northwestern, 9.5-point favorite. Over under 50.
He's got the gear.
Over under 58.5.
Coach K retires and, you know, John Shire takes over, as
John
coach,
Shire from the Chicago Suburbs.
You know, yeah. And, you know, they have some point. Wait, hold up. Did you ask about basketball?
No, sorry, Coach. Football. This is not the illegal screen. It's illegal motion still.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Northwestern's going to roll, dude. They're going to cover. I don't know about the over under. They're going to cover, dude. I don't have much. I'm not buying much stock into Duke here.
Okay. Josh.
Weird schedule for Northwestern. They open up week 0 in Ireland, then they have a week rest. I don't know, having a second, well, a week 1 technically bye week. That kind of felt a little weird for me, but I'll tell you what caught my eye. Duke shut out Temple.
Yep.
Temple's terrible, but Duke also had 328 passing yards, 24 of 30 for Riley Leonard.
And Leonard also led the team in rushing.
I know. They had like 500 yards of offense. The Wildcat defense still has some issues that I'm not entirely confident about. I think Duke can actually hang around. I'm going to say Northwestern wins by a touchdown, which means I'm trusting the Dukies to cover.
And here I was thinking I was going to be the only one taking Duke. I saw a little of that Duke Temple action. Mike Elko, good on ya. Like, seriously, Duke played like good, like fundamental football. It was so strange. I can't remember the last time I saw that happen.
But Northwestern beat Nebraska.
Okay. Duke beat Temple. Nebraska and Temple. 6-1 way, half dozen the other.
Hey, did you see this Brian Kelly press conference, by the way?
No, but speaking of Brian Kelly, I wanted to mention it's a little sad, but it's mostly funny. Did you guys see Mason Smith, Bill Gramatica himself?
Yeah.
Josh, did you see this? Defensive lineman Mason Smith, a super highly touted recruit in 2021, the number one player in the country, plays for LSU, celebrates a tackle for a loss and tears his Achilles or ACL or both.
I heard about the injury. I heard about the injury, yeah, but
Bill Gramatica did.
I didn't know it was in that context. Oof. Yep.
Yeah, it's a rough go for Mason Smith.
Yep. So I think that is going to do it then for us here today, gentlemen.
Ricky Rain at Old Dominion was on Kirk Herbstreit's top five coaches for the week.
There you go. Ooh.
And so was Mike Elko.
Nice.
Yeah, Elko was Elko deserved it. Josh, what have you got?
Well, I got two intriguing games featuring very desperate Power Five teams, and then a very quick potential bearing the lead winner take all matchup. So the first one, Colorado, ugly a week ago.
Yeah,
the Durrell enjoyment from the COVID shortened season long in our rearview mirror. They travel to Air Force, where Air Force basically doesn't lose. The Academy is like an 18-point favorite. If the Buffs get absolutely destroyed, the Carl Durrell experiment might be measured in about weeks by that point. Also from the Power Five, intriguing thing, Kansas looked pretty good. They absolutely destroyed Tennessee Tech in their opener. They travel to West Virginia. The Mountaineers, two touchdown favorites. If Neil Brown blows that game, which, hey, you know what? Hats off to Kansas, Lance Leopold doing things. But he might also be measured in about minutes or hours for that after that game. And then finally, a little potential bearing the lead scenario for us. Old Dominion just got done knocking off Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. East Carolina just got done, should have, knocking off NC State. They square off in beautiful Greenville, North Carolina. The winner of that might be inside position for our new bearing the lead team potential.
Well, it would be again for Coastal. Or sorry, not Coastal. I mean ECU. Yeah. It would be ECU second time.
Yeah. Our first Coastal's game. Too good. We can't Coastal bury the lead on them anymore. They had a nice win over Army. They're gonna destroy Gardner Webb this
guys,
week.
Guys, they'll be 2-0. You're missing. Real quick. I can't believe this. You're missing the real matchup. The Rams of Colorado State hosting MTSU. MTSU looking for a road upset here. They're plus 9. No. I can't believe
you're going to say we were missing the real exciting matchup of Auburn San Jose.
Just what I
actually kind of be exciting because San Jose State, not because of Auburn.
I know it wasn't in spread formation, but Hawaii, by the way, has looked absolutely awful in their 0-2 start. Mm. They traveled to Michigan. The line right now on ESPN is 51. The over-under is 67. Can Michigan clear the over-under themselves?
Yeah. Vandy almost did against them in Hawaii.
Probably.
Vandy scored 63 on them in Hawaii.
Ooh, our boy Timmy Chang. Rough start.
You know what? I mean, when you're in a home stadium that holds about 8,000 people, it's times are a little tough right there.
They got nobody.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us here today on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. So on behalf of our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton, here in Nashville, Tennessee, and our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Accounting, Josh Cook up there in Chicago, Illinois, this is the Professor Emeritus in the city saying so long, and see you next time on Illegal Motion College Football Podcast.
Like, rate, subscribe. Believe in dogs. Believe in Badgers.
And Happy Illegal Motion. Elastico Week.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.